This is KUNM 89.9, Albuquerque, Santa Fe, KRRT 90.9, Arroyo Seco, Taos, KRRE 91.9, Las Vegas, KRAR 91.9, Española, and KBOM 88.7, Socorro, online at KUNM.org.
I had a chance to sit down with the legendary Mark Guerrero last week for a two-part interview. You can still catch that one at KUNM.org, but this is what part two sounded like. I'm here with Mark Guerrero. Hey, Mark, last time we talked, I wanted to talk a little bit more about your contemporary work. I had a chance to sit down with Ray Manzarek of The Doors, and the first question, the only question I asked him was, do you ever get tired of answering questions about The Doors? His answer, only the stupid ones. After that, I had nothing left to say, and he was like, no, go ahead, I'm just kidding. There is nothing that can top that answer. I mean, as a member of The Doors, as a part of that generation, that had to be the perfect answer.
And after that answer, you'd probably be afraid of asking a stupid question, right?
I was afraid every question would be stupid. Either. That's why I wanted to start with you. Do you sometimes feel limited by what you did in establishing your band, Mark and the Escorts, in the East Side Sound in 1960s L.A., or by having to explain people now who don't know your legacy, your history?
It's kind of ironic that the first record I ever made when I was 15 years old, Get Your Baby, is probably distributed around the world more than anything I did since, you know, and my work evolved, and I've recorded for major labels, and I've done some songs I'm very proud of. That first recording just became like a garage rock classic, and it's like on five or six compilations, you know, all around the world. It's on this big English compilation called Mind Rocker. It's a 13 CD collection, and there's this one I think out of Germany, Jump Jive and Harmonize, and you know, of course, the Dionysus record that we're on the cover. All four of our songs are on there. But there's like about six compilations, one in Japan, to Get Your Babies on. And we're mentioned in a lot of books, you know, about the East Side Sound and stuff. And it's so ironic that the thing I did when I'd just been playing guitar 2 or 3 years and just been playing music, you know, for 2 or 3 years is so pervasive on all the later stuff that's so much more me and much more sophisticated isn't quite as around the world as that one. You know, it's pretty funny. I don't mind it because I'm proud of being part of that whole scene and of that whole thing.
Why do you think so many people overseas are fascinated with that sound, the East Side Sound?
I think because it was such a boom. There were so many bands. It was one of those magical times and places where there's just a huge creative burst. Something happens, like Liverpool of the early 60s when the Beatles came up, like Seattle during the grunge time, or San Francisco during the psychedelic era, or San Francisco during the, you know, the, yeah, San Francisco during the psychedelic era. But East L.A. of the early to mid-60s, there was just, you know, abandoned every garage and a lot of places to play. And through fate, several of those groups had national hit records, and the Cannibal Headhunters toured with the Beatles, and a lot of things happened that made that era legendary.
I get some music from a site, and in their rock section, British Invasion has its own little subset. But why isn't there an East Side Sound subset in the rock section at some of those websites? I mean, talking Los Angeles, that had to be a lot of artists putting out a ton of music back then.
Yeah, I don't know why nobody has done that, but I mean, you know, it is recognized as a movement because it's mentioned in documentaries. There's a documentary about it. Chicano Rock, The Sounds of East Los Angeles is a major documentary that's available. But it's just been written about in many books, not just books on Chicano music or East L.A. music, but in rock and roll history books. As a matter of fact, a book is coming out in February called Turn Up the Radio, Rock Music in Los Angeles from 1958 to 1972, I believe is the title, by Harvey Kubernick. And I was interviewed extensively for it, and I loaned them a lot of my flyers and images, and I wrote a couple of paragraphs on a historic Chicano concert I was part of. The East Side Sound will be represented in this major rock book by a major rock writer that also is going to be talking about the Sunset Strip sound and the Doors and the Buffalo Springfield and the South Central, all the music that was happening in Los Angeles in the 60s. So, you know, East L.A. is usually mentioned and recognized in books, documentaries, articles. So it is recognized, but like you say, maybe nobody's thought of putting it in what you're talking about.
You know, we were talking earlier about there not being enough days in the week, enough years in the decade to hear all of the great music that had to come out of the East Side Sound back in the 60s. Not to mention the bands that didn't make it, that didn't have commercial success that maybe didn't even put out any records, so there's no document of the fantastic music that they made.
Right. The bands that had the hits, you know, the Blendells, Premieres, Cowboy Headhunters, the Midnighters, they're the ones always mentioned and remembered, and that's wonderful. But there were a lot of other groups, and some just as good and some better, that had records that didn't become hits, and some that never recorded to begin with. And those bands have pretty much just been forgotten simply because there's no auditory evidence of them. But there were bands like the Prophets, the Counts, the Emeralds, the Exotics, really good and really popular bands, Mickey and the Invaders, Mickey and the Invaders did make some records, but a lot of times groups like that just get forgotten. And that's why I like to write about them when I can on my website or mention them or put their music up. And so it's not always about how talented you are. Hits take a certain amount of luck and timing and fate.
If people want to check out your website, even as they're listening to this interview, what?
MarkGuerrero.com, MarkGuerrero.com. And it's a pretty huge website on Chicano music and the East Side Sound and my own career and my dad's career, Lalo Guerrero.
It's a giant website, man. Come on. How many hits do you have on that thing? 10,000, 15,000?
Maybe 20,000 a month, unique visitors.
Crazy, man. As somebody who was there when it happened, I mean, you're definitely chronicling and documenting pretty much everything that happened. But how would you explain the commercial success that some bands at that time enjoyed versus maybe the lack of opportunity that was available to other bands?
It so happened that there were certain people that were very instrumental in recording these bands. One of them was Eddie Davis, who was a white guy. I think he was Jewish. And he owned 8 small independent labels, Pharaoh, Linda, Rampart, Valhalla, a bunch of labels. And he was actively looking for Chicano bands in East L.A. to record. And a local Chicano manager, Billy Cardenas, manager/producer, was sort of his right-hand man. He'd go out and scout the bands, find the bands, bring them in to record. So, the East L.A. bands were very fortunate that those people were around to take them into studios into Hollywood and make records, including my band. We did it with Billy Cardenas. I knew Eddie Davis myself. And so that was one lucky thing that a lot of us got to record. We were also right 20 minutes away from Hollywood, where there were a lot of studios and a lot of small record companies and big record companies. And then there was Bob Keane, who was a questionable figure. He did own Delphi Records and Donna Records, and he's the one who discovered Ritchie Valens and put out La Bamba. And he also recorded later my friend Chan Romero, his famous The Hippie Hippie Shake that the Beatles later used to play. But so those were outlets that these groups had. So many groups recorded for either Bob Keane or Eddie Davis and Billy Cardenas. And so a lot of stuff got out there. And not every band was lucky enough to be picked up by them, or, they only had so much time and so much to pick up certain bands. And so some got the break and others didn't.
Were there a lot of bands? Was it like they were a dime a dozen, as we imagine in L.A. in the 60s?
Oh, yeah, they might have been worth more than a dime, but... yeah, there were just, I would even guess hundreds of bands, but many, many, many bands and teenage bands. And what made it unique is there were many, many teenage venues, dances. There were, dances in church halls, union halls, every weekend. And there'd be 4 or 5 bands on the bill. And we played virtually every weekend. And there was a huge scene with teenagers going out and dancing and these bands to play. So there were places for us to play. Like maybe today there's a lot of teenage bands rehearsing in garages, but they don't have so many places to play like that. They may have a wedding or a private party, but we had auditoriums and union halls and dances with hundreds of people and energy, and it was a fantastic scene. It was really incredible.
1960s LA, let's face it, it was all about putting the record, having the next big hit. Do you think some of the bands, even the ones that enjoyed commercial success, do you think that they ever really got their just due, or were they exploited?
Monetarily or otherwise?
Yeah, financially.
I think many of those guys didn't make money off the records, for whatever reason. I think they made money from their live gigs, and maybe if they toured. I don't know what went on there, but there wasn't a lot of royalties being paid and a lot of, even contracts being signed. I mean, when we made our record, we didn't even sign a contract. We just were so thrilled to go in and record. We recorded, and that was it. And to this day, those compilations that we're on, we don't get any royalties for that. We were teenagers. We weren't even legal. We would have had to have our parents sign, And so there was just a lot of, it was like the Wild West, you know.
I was laughing because we were talking a little while ago, and you pointed out that Mark and the Escorts were ramping up in 1963 when rock and roll was only about 8 years old.
Well, I'm thinking about that. You know, really, when you think of when Elvis came out, you know, of course, the roots of rock and roll came from, you know, black artists from the late 40s and Louis Jordan and people like that in the early 50s, and Little Richard was rocking real early. But when rock and roll started to be recognized as what it was and called rock and roll, with Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard and Buddy Holly and the Everly Brothers and Elvis, you know, 1955, 1956, I mean, that was kind of when rock and roll was born in the form we know it today, modern rock and roll. And, you know, here we were in 1962, 63, already having bands and rocking out. You know, we were just 8 years from the birth of rock and roll. We were rocking. So that, you know, that kind of makes us definitely Chicano rock pioneers, because we were pretty early on. Nowadays, when a band forms, they've got 55 years or whatever of rock history to draw upon. You know, we were pretty early there.
We were talking earlier about some bands that enjoyed a lot of commercial success, and maybe even today, 40, 50 years later, in people's minds or are prominent or at the forefront of the East Side Sound. But clearly, that wasn't all that there was to the East Side Sound.
And that's what the shame was, that those bands that were really, really good and really, really popular that never made a record, well, of course, they're pretty much forgotten. They're never mentioned because if you don't record, there's no physical evidence of what you sounded like. And so, you know, unfortunately, Mark and the Escorts eventually evolved into, we changed our name to the Men from Sound, S period, O period, U period, N period, D period. And we got really, really, really good, and we were very popular, but we never made a record. So therefore, the Men from Sound are forgotten, and Mark and the Escorts aren't. And frankly, I think the Men from Sound were better, but we didn't make a record. So it's, you know, you got to make a record to be on the map. Another exciting thing I did want to mention that made the 60s so incredible was, you know, how music was evolving at that time. Like when I first started my band, what was really, really popular was surf music. You know, you had Wipeout was a huge hit. You had The Ventures making all these surf records. You had Dick Dale, the king of the surf guitar, you know, with all that reverb. You had, you know, and there were so many bands and so many surf hit records that, you know, even East LA bands were playing surf music. And so we had the surf craze going on, and so we had a lot of instrumentals, and we did that. And then we always did the R&B and blues, because that was always popular. But then we were lucky enough to be right there at the birth of the British invasion. The Beatles came out in 1963, you know, 64, I Want to Hold Your Hand. And suddenly the Beatles and the British invasion came in, so now the East Side band started to pick up some of the British invasion stuff. Then you had James Brown. You had Motown, the birth of Motown, the Temptations, and then Four Tops, and Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, all that to draw on. And then you had the Stax Volt, you know, the harder edge black music, the, you know, Wilson Pickett, Otis Redding, you know, all that stuff. All that stuff happening for the first time, all bursting on the scene here. And all bursting on the radio at the same time. In those days, the top 40 radio stations, there'd be a Beatle record, and then next would be a Frank Sinatra record, and then a James Brown record, and then a surf tune or whatever, you know what I mean? It was all there to draw on. And then the late 60s, you had the whole psychedelic era. You had Cream, and you had Jimi Hendrix, and Buffalo Springfield, and that whole San Francisco scene. And so, you know, what better time period to have been a musician, man? It was just all happening, and it was all inspirational. And the East LA groups were soaking it all up and taking it all in and using it as influences. So I don't think there's ever been an era like that.
You know, as part of Mark and the Escorts, how did that decade progress for you? I mean, where did you see a point to maybe start considering transitioning to a different style of music than what you'd started out with with Mark and the Escorts?
I think it was just a matter of, you know, like I was saying, what we were hearing on the radio, and music was evolving, and so the groups were evolving, and I certainly was. And so we just, there came a point where a band name like Mark and the Escorts was out of style. You know, I mean, in the early 60s, there was Art and the Nightlighters in East L.A., and Bobby and the Esquires, and Mark and the Escorts, and Ronnie and the Casuals, and the Jaguars, and those kind of names. And all of a sudden, after the British invasion, those names sounded old-fashioned, you know. So, we, you know, people started changing their names to a little more modern names. And then the music, we started getting, more British invasion style, and a little more sophisticated musically. And then when the late 60s came on, there we were playing Hendrix and Cream and dressing differently and growing our hair long. And, you know, we evolved with the music, and a lot of the groups did, and that's what made it so special. There was such an evolution from the early to late 60s. It was incredible.
Sent me a link to an interview that you had done with a guy named DJ Ganes, I guess on satellite radio. How did that interview come about?
No, it wasn't satellite. It was internet radio. Dublab.com. They just contacted me like a lot of people do, you know, through my website, and they just come and said, would you like to do an interview on the 60s East Side Sound? And I said, sure. And at first they asked me, do you want to be interviewed or do you want to just do it yourself? And I had like about an hour and a half, 2 hours to do. And I said, I guess I'll just do it myself. And because I wasn't sure that they were going to know what questions to ask or whatever. And so I went there with the idea that I was going to just do it myself. And so when I got there, this guy showed up, who had interviewed other people in the past. From he had interviewed one of the Midnighters maybe a month before. He showed up to meet me, and I said, hey, well, you know, why don't you introduce me? We need somebody to introduce me. And he did. He started asking questions and got comfortable, and he was asking good questions. He knew what he was talking about. He was a young guy, and he knew a lot about the East Side Sound and the history. And so he wound up doing the whole interview, and it came out great. You know, it just we just went with it.
I listened to the interview, and clearly there are stations in people out there trying to help others rediscover and even preserve the history of that sound. But how? How can they do that?
It's tough. Well, I'm doing it, you know, one-man crew doing it, you know, with my website. I'm trying to do it. But, you know, frankly, there was a group of us that got together about a year ago, veterans of the East Side Sound. We're talking about a couple of the managers from those days, a bunch of the main, you know, movers and shakers, band leaders from that era. And we all got together. There might have been about 10 or 15 of us. And we were talking about, well, how do we preserve this? And how do we protect it? And how do we make sure that the information is correct that comes out about this? And blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like what happens with a lot of groups, there wasn't a lot of agreement on how to do it and what to name the group. There was a big, big problem on what to name it. There were some people that were saying, we shouldn't have the name East L.A. in the title of the group. I said, are you crazy? I mean, that's the whole point. It has to be the East L.A. Preservation Society or whatever. It has to be. And they said, no, it might have negative connotations. It might alienate some people. You know. So there was a huge disagreement on that. I thought I didn't want to be a part of the group if it didn't mention East L.A. in it, because to me that was the whole point, to really be proud of that and to push that. So there were so many disagreements on how to do it that it just dissolved. So, you know, it's hard to do that by committee. My point was, hey, I'm doing it anyway, so I'm going to continue to do it myself and let everybody else do it themselves, I guess.
Well, I love that interview with DJ Ganes, but let me ask you this. If Little Steven has his underground garage, who's going to host that one for the East Side Sound?
Me, of course. And you could be my sidekick.
Oh, yeah. If I hear Farmer John one more time, oh, man. I know I've called you many times to ask you about the Midnighters. And while I'm there, let me ask you about this. Every time I pick up, every time I look this up on Windows Media Player, the Midnight Feeling always comes back as listed to Lamont Cranston Band / Rendon.
I don't know what that means. I know Larry Rendon is a sax player from the Midnighters. I don't know what the Lamont Cranston Band is. You know what it probably means? I just figured it out. Probably that song was originally recorded by the Lamont Cranston Band, and they wrote it, and so they wanted to, you know, make sure to get the credit for the writer's credit. So it's credited to that band, and probably Larry Rendon of the Midnighters probably put a new spin on it and I guess got a little writer's credit for what he added to it. So that's probably what his name is on it. That probably explains.
That's a killer surf instrumental coming off in the Midnight Hour. Man, even Chicanos could surf, I guess, back in 60s L.A.
Oh, yeah, a lot of surf bands and surf music going on at that time there, too.
There's another band that I always get on your site to look up information about, The Mixtures. What can you tell us about that band?
They were a really interesting band because they were from Ventura County, which is like, you know, an hour, hour and a half north of L.A. So they weren't from East L.A., but they really became part of the East Side Sound and the East Side Sound history because I believe they were the first band that Eddie Davis, the gentleman I mentioned before, that he recorded. And he recorded them, and they even had a television show. There was a local TV station in L.A. There was a dance show, and the Mixtures were like the house band on there. And they would back up all the stars of the day. They'd come on there and to do their hits, and they backed up some amazing people. I forgot who they were, but there were some amazing people they got to back up. So they were on that show, and then they became the house band at a real popular place in Pomona, which is east of Los Angeles. The Rainbow Gardens, a very legendary venue. They were the house band there in the early 60s. They played the, you know, some of the East Side Circuit and the Al Monte Legion Stadium, another legendary place. And but they were a multiracial group. There were a couple of black guys in the group, a couple of Latinos, and a couple of white guys, and that's why they called themselves the Mixtures. And they had one record that was very popular in East LA called Olive Oil. It was an instrumental, and it had, like, you know, like Popeye's voice. You know, it would, there'd be a break, and it would be like, "Oh, Popeye," and then Olive Oil. You know, it was like a real gimmicky record, but it was very much, to me, it fits in the East Side Sound style. Instrumental, Telecaster guitar, a certain vibe to it. And they had another a well-known record called Stompin' at the Rainbow. And yeah, so they were a really good group, and they. And then later, one of the guys from the Romancers, another classic East LA band, joined their group. And so even though they were from Ventura, they're kind of, and they're always on the compilations with all the East Side bands. So they're part of the East Side Sound, really.
You know, I love that, the Mixtures Stomping at the Rainbow. You were there when it happened. What was that like to attend a show like that where they were stomping at the Rainbow? I mean, you can hear the energy. It's a crazy crowd. But was it cool? Was there trouble? Or was it just a party time?
Well, you know, there were, you know, a lot of the dances, once in a while there'd be a fight, and we got to say that. Usually not. There were some venues where, you know, you almost expected it. There was this one hall. One time we were playing, and a big fight broke out, and it spread, and pretty soon, like, 10, 20 people were fighting, and chairs were flying, and suddenly, sometimes we'd keep playing, sometimes we would just stop and kind of get behind the amps and not get hit by, you know, flying debris, you know. So there was a little of that here and there, but generally not. It was usually the fights happen at the wedding dances and parties like that, but the most of the organized dances there was not. But it was just a good vibe, and sometimes there'd be you know, interracial mixture of crowd, and there wouldn't be any fighting. Everybody was just digging on the music, you know. There'd be some famous people, you know, like I saw Billy Preston at the San Alfonso Auditorium before he got famous, you know, playing with the Beatles. You know, he was on Get Back, and he was in the movie Let It Be, Billy Preston, African-American keyboard player. Well, I saw him perform there with all these LA bands, you know, and the Turtles played at the Montebello Ballroom, and, you know, so there was Sonny and Cher. They used to be called Caesar and Cleo. They played at the Paramount Ballroom with all these LA bands, and there was the Blundells, and so it was a really incredible period and good vibe.
The Blundells, Cannibal and the Headhunters, the Midnighters. But there were some other bands that were putting out some great music. What about the Village Callers or Solas Brothers or some of the less well-known names coming out of that sound?
The Village Callers, I think they were very good. But they're important because they were one of the first bands, if not the first band of that era in East L.A. to go really Latin. You know, they got Latin percussionists in the group. They played congas and timbales, and they started doing more Latin stuff and Latin rock. And they recorded the song Evil Ways, which was, I believe, by Mongo Santa Maria or some other Cuban artist. They were the first ones to record that before Santana. They did a record on it, got released, got some airplay in San Francisco, I hear. And Santana probably heard it and said, "Hey, let's learn that," or whatever, and that started Santana's career, their version of Evil Ways. So the Village Callers, they were very good, they were very popular, and they lasted for quite a few years. They always had a really good female vocalist. In fact, one of their female vocalists, Jerry Gonzalez, is still around, and she just did a recording with me a couple of weeks ago. She's an awesome, world-class singer, and she came from that group. And then eventually, after many years, the Village Callers evolved into a group called Chico. And many of them are still playing in Chico today, and they're a great, great band still playing around East Los Angeles. The other band you mentioned, the Solas Brothers. The Solas Brothers started out with a group called the Jaguars, and the leader of that group was Mario Panacqua. And they did one classic record called Where Lovers Go, an instrumental that was very popular in East LA, always included in the compilations. And he is the one that first put the Solas Brothers in his band. They were just, you know, like 10 and 12 years old, or really young, but they could harmonize beautifully. They were great singers. But he had to ask their parents if they could be in his band, and they allowed him to. And that was the beginning of their career. They made a bunch of records with the Jaguars. And eventually they formed the group Guerra that wound up having a national hit in the 80s with Together, and they're still playing today. Guerra is a very popular, iconic Chicano band. Well, the Salas Brothers are the founders of that band.
I'm looking at your website right now, and again, this has got to be the definitive site for all things East Side Sound. But I'm noticing Ruben and the Jets. What's the story with that band? And then I'll tell you my story about that band.
Well, Ruben Guevara is a very interesting character, person. He's very much a Renaissance guy. You know, I mean, he's a poet. He's a songwriter. He's an R&B singer. He's been involved in, you know, performance art and plays. And he's still around and still. He did an album about a year ago with a group called, I think it's Ruben Guevara and the Lovers, L-U-V-E-R-S, I think. And really good, you know, real, you know, some of it's very R&B-ish, some of it's kind of jazzy, very poetic. But anyway, in the late 60s, he met Frank Zappa, and Frank Zappa had made an album called Ruben and the Jets about a fictitious band. And Frank Zappa, the great Frank Zappa, who later founded, you know, had founded the Mothers of Invention, the most important band in rock history, he had a contact with the East Side Sound. There were a lot of East Side bands that were in the studio with him. He was running the Casuals, you know, he was aware of the East Side Sound and touched it a little bit, you know. I think he grew up in Pomona, so he was right around it, and he knew what it was about. So he had this fictional album called Ruben and the Jets, and when he met Ruben, he eventually told him, hey, why don't you form a real Ruben and the Jets? And he did. He got a bunch of Chicanos together, and they made two albums for a major label. I forget which one it was, Warner Brothers or one of the majors. And they did two albums, Con Safos and For Real. And they toured, and they opened for, like, major rock groups of the era in the early 70s, played the Whiskey a Go-Go, and they did a lot of things. And that's who Ruben and the Jets are.
If you can recommend any sites or places people might be able to track down some of these classic albums, CDs, whatever you want to call them.
Best place is to go to my website, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, you can look up whatever group. I have stories on most of these groups. And at the end of the story, it'll show where you can order them. You know, many of the CDs are still available. And you can, through my website, you can get a lot of this music. Know where to find out where to get it.
Here's my story on Ruben and the Jets. I'm down the hall in Studio C. It's our backup studio doing this interview. But if you make the little walk, the maybe 15 yards or whatever, to the control room where the live shows are actually going out, we have a glass wall along one side, and in there is an album cover, I guess orphaned because there's no album in it, but the album cover is Ruben and the Jets. But here's my story. Maybe about 5 years ago, and I haven't done this so much, but I'd say maybe two packs of CDs ago, because I haven't bought a CD in a while, but I went to a big box retailer, let's say, and bought a stack of CDs and came home and started sorting some out for various purposes, you know, recording here at the studio or burning some other music onto it or whatever. And I was dividing them up, I don't know, a couple of weeks later or whatever. I pull out the CD, I go to record, and it's out of that stack. I put it in my computer to burn some music on, and it said it was already full, which is weird because it just came out of a stack of unopened CDs 2 weeks ago or whatever, but I've gone ahead and divided them up, and it said that it was full. So I thought there had to be an error on my computer. Anyway, I went ahead and played it, and it came up as Ruben and the Jets.
That blank CD had Ruben and the Jets on it?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. This was a big stack of CDs that I'd opened up maybe 2 weeks earlier. Later, I was at home. I was going to burn something onto a CD. I pulled it out, popped it in. My media player said, go ahead and insert a blank disc, because the one that I was inserting was full. So I went ahead and called up my media player, and it filled it in. You know, since I was connected to the internet, it filled it in and told me it was Ruben and the Jets.
Which album was it?
I have no idea. I would never. Well, don't even know who they were.
The Ruben and Jets album, it had to be either Con Safos or For Real.
I think it was one called For Real. The one you're talking about is Cruising with Ruben and the Jets. That's by Frank Zappa.
Okay. Well,
but I think this one was called For Real.
That's Ruben and the Jets.
How do you explain that, man? I know it's the Halloween season, but what do you think happened there?
That's freaky. That's the universe at work, I guess. That's freaky.
Freaky, man. It was meant to be.
The East LA gods are upon you.
I mean, look at the website, and you're doing everything that you possibly can to preserve the history and the legacy of the East Side Sound generally. But what about you specifically?
Sometimes I forget to promote myself. In the 90s, I was recording a lot in my studio. I was spending hours and hours and hours recording my songs, and just I recorded 3 CDs worth of stuff in like 3 years. But then once I started my website in 1998, most of my time and energy in the last 15 years has gone into, you know, researching, interviewing people, writing stories, writing articles, doing lectures, doing radio shows, whatever. And so it has taken away from my songwriting and recording. But I think it's been worth it because it's, you know, it's another important thing to do. But I'm pretty much ready to get back into more writing and recording again.
I was going to say, it's not all about putting out records or having the next hit these days or even maintaining your legacy, but there's got to be an outlet for you to maintain or express your creative soul.
No, I've always played throughout the years. I never stopped performing. But like I said, I do miss the writing and recording. And I just recorded a song a few weeks ago, and I just wrote a new song about a week ago. So I feel I'm getting back in the saddle again in that way. But I'm going to do both because they're both important. I love doing both, you know.
I was talking to Joaquin Carrasco, and I was telling you this story about, looking back on your career, are there songs that people say, oh, dude, that's you, and you sit there and think, well, that was me 40, 50 years ago. When people call you and want to hear you play nowadays, what excites you most, that they want to hear the oldies, your first venture into music, or that they want to hear the stuff that you're putting out now?
Well, you know, for a while, around 2002, when I formed a new band to do my original stuff, I was just doing stuff from pretty much the late 70s on, you know, my version of Chicano rock. I was doing a lot of that. And I was kind of ignoring, see, in the early 70s, I was more into country rock and straight rock. And I did record my best record, I'm Brown, back then. It just happened to be in that mix. But then now, I'm to the point now, I'm doing a concert December 7th in Los Angeles, Cal State Los Angeles, my alma mater. And now I'd rather do like stuff from all the eras. You know, now I'll do Get Your Baby, you know, my first record, and then I'll do I'm Brown's in the 70s, and then I'll do On the Boulevard from, you know, 1979, and then I'll go into the 80s, and then I'll do some of my dad's stuff, try to do at least 2 or 3 of his. And so it's really, I'd rather do like a retrospective of the whole thing, and that's really enjoyable to do, so, you know. So once in a while these days, I get a Mark and the Escorts reunion job where we get together just for the songs we did in the mid-60s, including our recordings. For that, that's all we do. We just go back in time and do that. My 70s band, we did a reunion a few years ago, and we just did that. So in those cases, you would just do that specific thing. But if I'm going to do a Mark Guerrero concert, I'll just do from all the eras, you know.
Whatever happened to all the guys in all the bands? Do you keep in contact?
Yeah, a lot of them, yeah. And so many of them do appreciate so much, you know, what I'm doing, because especially the bands that have been somewhat forgotten. You know, there was one band recently that I made sure to play one of their records on that show I did, we discussed on Dublab, and they were so happy that I played it, and they said they all get together, you know, still now and then they even jam, and they were all thrilled that their record was played on there, and I love doing that. That's great, because these people deserve the recognition, you know, and a lot of them get forgotten.
What do you got going on coming up in 2014?
Well, I'm gigging a lot here in the Palm Springs area, of course, but it seems like I'm doing a lot of lectures more and more. You know, I've been doing this for quite a few years, where I go and I speak about Chicano music, the East Side Sound, my dad's history, my history, for Chicano studies classes or groups of Chicano study classes or groups of students of various kinds. So I'm doing a lecture performance at Cal State San Bernardino in January. I'm doing a lecture performance at Cal State Los Angeles and a concert with the band. And I'm actually going to teach my first class in the history of Chicano rock at the Palm Desert campus of Cal State San Bernardino, a 6-week, 2 hours a week class on the history of Chicano rock. So I'm going to actually create 12 hours of stuff. But, you know, it should be pretty easy because, you know, again, since I've lived it, I can go on and on, as you can hear. And I'll show video, I'll show slideshows, I'll show documentaries. I'll even maybe bring in a couple of guest artists, you know, to talk. I'll play a few songs, and I'll talk about what I've learned about in the history of Chicano rock through living it and through researching it. So I'm doing more of that, you know, and occasional concerts and working on my website and interviewing more people. I want to keep building on and building on it, you know.
Right on, man. All right. Mark Guerrero, thanks for taking the time.
Well, you're welcome.
If people want to get in touch with... Go ahead.
Your support.
Go ahead. That one just came out. Here we go.
No. I said no, thank you, and thanks for your support of my music and your interest in what I do, you know.
If people want to get in, if people want to check out the website and or get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, markguerrero.com, markguerrero.com, and then you can always email me, info@markguerrero.com, and there's contact info in there as well.
Right on,
so,
man.
Check it out.
Always a pleasure to sit down and talk with you.
Same here, man, and I look forward to going to New Mexico soon, checking you out again, you know.
Yeah, come on.
You know, having some, you know, huevos rancheros.
Yeah. All right, Mark Guerrero, thanks so much.
Take care, man.